Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, over in the franchise world. My name is Paul Segretto, and this is Franchise Today. Today is Wednesday, January 18th, 2017, hot off the heels of Franchise Expo South this past weekend in Dallas, Texas, where I was also joined by my co-host, Stan Friedman, who's on the line with me from Atlanta today. Hi, Stan.
Hey, Paul. What a great show that was. I had a ton of fun in Dallas, and that show seemed to really have stimulated a lot of interest from the North Texas region. What do you think?
Yeah, I thought it was a fantastic show. I thought the traffic was steady. We never got bombarded at once. We had a couple of lull times, but that's to be expected. But I thought all in all, the traffic was very steady. I think MFE did another wonderful job in all their marketing. I saw the advertisements on TV. I saw it in print and, of course, Google AdWords and pay-per-clicks and all other kinds of digital marketing that was out there. I repeatedly saw things about Franchise Expo South. I thought the K. Bailey Hutchinson Convention Center was a very nice venue, even though I got lost on Wednesday heading into set up in the bowels of the convention center and drove around for 20 minutes. I had armed security guards chasing me, Jennifer in the passenger seat saying, "Where are you going?" And I was just fed up at that point. But, yes, it was a great event, and I did not succumb to the long arm of the law while I was trying to barricade or go through barricades. Anyway, yeah, it was really a great event.
Yeah, not like
kudos
not like
to Tom Portese. Yeah. Yeah, not like
not
in Denver.
Like Denver. Yeah. I'll tell you, though, I thought the K. Bailey Hutchinson Convention Center was a little bit of a, at least the classrooms, that side of the building seemed a little bit institutional, kind of like an old school kind of a convention center. It almost felt like you were in an old high school or something, or a public school, as the way the place looked. But I will tell you, as I am not an exhibiting sponsor as you are. I'm a non-exhibiting sponsor, but I got to speak. And Saturday morning, Rebecca Monet and I had 121 registered for our session,
wow,
which in Denver was about 60. And last year at Franchise Expo South was about 80. So I would suggest to you that as a yardstick or a barometer for me, looking at how many registrants we get to our classes, an indicator, this was a very successful and hungry market for franchise information. And we had a full room and it was a very diverse room. So we had parents with their children. We had young people looking for their first opportunity. We had several people that were already in business but towing into the franchise waters. In all cases, though, out of 121 registered, we had interested people who got up at 9 o'clock on a Saturday morning to fill up that room. So you're right. Hats off to MFV. What a great program. My biggest problem was being parked at a hotel a little further away than I would have if I had a choice, but the people at the Sheraton didn't bother telling us that the convention center that their hotel was tethered in is their own. So when we asked them, how close are you to the convention center? And they said, well, it's right across the flybridge. And, well, not to the Cape Bailey, but to theirs. So that was a bit of a surprise. But even at that, you know, everything about the experience in Dallas was something I look forward to doing again next year. So to Tom Portese and Jim Mastandrea and Rich and everybody, Rich Dondrono, the entire MFV team, you guys just did it again.
Yeah, and you know, and you didn't mention, too, I mean, you had 120-something people in your event that got up early on a Saturday morning. That was a paid session, too. They didn't just sit in there for free.
No, that's true. And just for full transparency, they didn't pay me, but they paid to be there. You know, I love teaching that class. I don't have any direct nexus to the potential buyers, but that's why I feel like they can allow me, Steve Gross and Tom can give me the privilege of teaching that class and sharing my years of franchising experience with these newbies to franchising. But because I don't have any direct skin in the game, I'm not going to benefit from what they buy if they buy. And so, yeah, it's a ton of fun for me to teach it. But, yeah, 100 people paid $100 a head, or 121 people spent $100 to be there. So it put pressure on me and Rebecca to call it an early night the night before, because you have a duty to those people looking forward to hearing from you and hoping you're going to make some sense the next day. And hopefully we did just that.
Sure, I'm sure you did. And it was my pleasure to help you celebrate your 50th birthday party on your birthday on Saturday night.
Yeah, yeah, my 50th.
We'll leave it at that.
1850th. But thank you, Paul. It was a pleasure. It was a pleasure being with you.
Yeah. Today's guest is Chris LaRocca, the founder of Crushed Red. And a quote that I found, it said, well, from Chris, was, "We are carving out our own distinctive niche in the fast casual space that we have dubbed Artisan Fast, serving up true artisan flavors fast in a welcoming and comfortable environment." And today's segment of Franchise Today is aptly titled "The Birth of Artisan Fast," and I welcome Chris LaRocca to the show.
Hey, good morning, Stan. Paul, thanks for having me on.
Happy to have you with us.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So, Crushed Red, really an interesting name, and we're going to get into some of the components of the brand. But why don't we start out telling us, if you would, Chris, a little bit about yourself, because I know you started in as a foodie, so to speak, at the age of 9, which was only a few short years ago. So why don't you bring us up to date, Chris the person, and how you got into the restaurant industry?
Well, your show's not long enough for me to fit it all in, so I'll give you the Reader's Digest version. At 9, I started working with my dad on Saturdays in his first restaurant, and, you know, doing what restaurant kids do, and that's washing dishes and the like. But I always loved being in the kitchen with the chef. And remember when I was 9, telling my parents, I want to grow up and be a chef. I never did, never went to culinary school, but through the years became very passionate about food, flavors, and layering flavors to create something that's generally a little off-center, just a little curious, adventurous. And worked for my parents for years and years, and then went on to the corporate restaurant life, where I learned how things happen from a business perspective. Traveled a lot with the restaurant groups I worked for, and just had a lot of ideas. And in doing so in these travels, put together a nice book of thoughts that if I ever had the opportunity, and at the ripe age of 36 with 4 children under 6 years old, came home one day, told my wife we're going to open our own restaurant, and that was a popular decision around my house. and we did. We put together a chef-driven, very creative restaurant in 1993, and I just kind of learned it the hard way, and we were very experimental with our food and received a lot of accolades here in St. Louis, and then had the opportunity. I was recruited by a international restaurant company that had 200 restaurants, of which 190 were franchise restaurants around the world, and I was asked to come to work with them to 2003, to develop a fast casual concept, to understand fast casual. And so I did. I spent 18 months between Los Angeles and Washington, D.C., getting inside of every fast casual I could at the time. And I came away with Fast Casual According to LaRocca, which was a very specific what works, what doesn't, why, and how do you build a better mousetrap. And that's really where I had some specific observations and thoughts and projections about fast casual, and that's where that was the birth of Crushed Red. Now, I didn't have an opportunity to do Crushed Red until, well, this is 2004, 2005. That sat on the shelf until 2012. when we opened the first Crushed Red Fast Casual here in St. Louis. So that was a long, long time. But there you go. That's kind of my background. And, you know, I've been called or accused of being a serial restaurant entrepreneur. So I'm not sure if there's a compliment in there or what. But, you know, I guess I'm guilty as charged.
So what about the name Crushed Red? How did you, you know, what about the name? You know, our names all say so much about us. Tell us how you formulated the name for the brand.
Well, the concept is based around chopped salads, organic dressed chopped salads, and we coupled it with flatbread pizzas. And I wanted to call the concept Urban Flats. Well, my partner is an IP attorney, and he wouldn't let me look left or right more than an inch or two, you know, before he was doing trademark searches, et cetera, et cetera. I came up with, you know, he shot down every name I came up with because it was taken by this company or that company. And I wanted a name that conjured up an image, you know, something that was maybe a little gritty, a little sexy, that just people would question or at least talk about. And one morning, my wife said something about Orange Crush, and as soon as I heard the word crush, I thought, and you know, you guys, being a restaurateur, we abbreviate everything. In a Mexican restaurant, guacamole is guac. In Italian restaurants, crushed red pepper is, you know, give me the crushed red, and you immediately know. So as soon as she said crushed, I thought crushed red, and we thought, you know what, that's interesting. And 50% of the people out there, when they hear crushed red, think they connect the dots and they're like, oh yeah, crushed red pepper. The other 50% are like, oh, is that, you know, like crushed red tomato? And I stopped right there. It's like, okay, you've got two different groups out there that are talking, analyzing, and figuring out the origin of this name. To me, that's marketing 101. We stop right there. Mission accomplished. So there you go.
Yeah, it's an interesting name. I immediately thought crushed red pepper myself, and thought I was missing the word pepper until I was doing a little bit more research on it. And I think it's an interesting combination of artisan craft salads and pizza, obviously bringing in people from both ends of the spectrum, so to speak. So what was the you know, the epiphany, so to speak, of going down the road, pizza, salad, somewhere in between? What was the deciding moment that you thought, okay, let's go down this path?
We were always going to be a chopped salad concept. That was at the heart of what we were doing. But I knew, or at least I felt, that we had to be more than just salad. Because there's, you know, you've got the veto vote in there. Hey, I don't want salad. You know, I want, you know, I want pizza. I want sandwich, or whatever the case may be. And we worked on a number of different iterations that comboed up. I was doing a pasta and salad at one point. That moved on to doing non-bread sandwiches, the Indian bread sandwiches. We never got into wraps because, you know, been there, done that, and that's, you know, anybody can do wraps. We always want to kind of push the envelope. But those weren't working operationally. So I took my culinary guy one Saturday. It literally was a Saturday morning. I called him and I said, hey, the big restaurant show's in Chicago. I'm feeling that gluten-free is an untapped market that we really ought to dig into. So we jumped on a plane that day, went to Chicago to the restaurant show, and proceeded to taste every horrible gluten-free product that's out there. And, you know, after trying probably 15 different products, because I was in search of something gluten-free to tie in with salads, I was just really depressed. And we came around the corner down the aisle, and we saw a crowd around this unique-looking pizza oven. And there were some guys from Sweden that had just finished manufacturing an oven that baked in 90 seconds. And we watched these guys, and we spent about an hour talking to the owners. And we walked away, and I said, Jason, I think we just found our hook. I think it's if we can do pizza in under 2 minutes, we've got something that nobody else has. So, excuse me. Came back to St. Louis, we planned, we went back to Chicago to their test kitchen, and we spent a full day making pizzas, doing everything we could to screw them up and really give it the, I mean, we did, they didn't know it, but we were there trying to sabotage it to see, okay, where's the chink in the armor? And it worked. So we immediately ordered an oven, brought it to St. Louis, and we spent the next 90 days just testing and working, and we ultimately don't use their ovens. We stopped right after we opened the first restaurant, and we now manufacture our own ovens. So, you know, we've got that under 2 minute bake and something that we control every aspect of.
So I want to ask a couple of questions about you and your profile, because when I read about you, I get the sense you are a concept guy, you are a vision guy, marketing guy, but there's a lot of ops that goes along with it in your case, and in both cases, the birth of the brand. And, you know, I know a lot of restaurant operators, and I know a whole lot of restaurant innovators, but I can't think of ever hearing a story about the birth of a brand that was inflicted by a death in its early stages. What an incredible way to get started and get to know your partners. Tell us a little bit about how all that manifests, Chris.
My partner and his son, my partner was an IP attorney, had been my attorney for 21 years. And I had a company which develops concepts, and we were a one-stop shop for hotels or our individuals that wanted to get into the restaurant business, and we'd flatten out the learning curve and we'd assist them along the way. And if we did our job right, in about 18 to 24 months, we'd be out of the picture and they would be on their own. So my partner, Ralph, phoned me one day and said, hey, my son is interested in getting in the restaurant business. He's 30 years old. Would you meet with us and have a drink? And I'm like, sure, I'll never turn down a free drink. so we did. We met at the Ritz-Carlton at the lobby. He introduced me to his son, Powell. We sat down, and I immediately said, Powell, what in God's earth are you thinking? Why would you be in real estate business? Why would you ever want to get in the restaurant business? And I went on about a 7 or 8 minute rant just about what we know from the business, and, you know, did everything I could to downplay it, to talk him out of it. It was very polite, and he listened. He let me talk. And when I stopped, he said, well, you know, thank you very much for coming over. I appreciate it. Is there somebody that you can direct me to that will help me, because you're obviously not going to? And I just, like, put my head in my hands. I said, oh, my gosh. I said, all right. Here's the deal. You think about everything I told you, and in a week, if you think you still want to get in the restaurant business, give me a call. Now, the whole time, his dad is sitting there, does not say a word. So, you know, the rest you can guess. A week later, phone rings, and, you know, we start working on some concepts. And we worked on two or three concepts that fell apart at the 11th hour. They never came together, and we were sitting in their office one day, and these guys were bummed out because a deal had fallen through. This was like the second or third time. And I'm thinking, how am I going to cheer these guys up? And I said, oh, I'll tell them about this fast casual. So I started to describe my crushed red vision, and their eyes lit up, and they said, wow, this is fantastic. You know, we'll fund it. Let's partner, let's do it. And we did. And we had no idea that this thing would hit the way it did, but we were very pleasantly surprised. And then we fast forward, you know, I'm the ops guy, you're right. and you know they're learning as we're going on. And I was actually on vacation diving, and I came up from a second dive, and the guys on the boat said, "Hey, you're Mr. LaRocca. They need you back there." I'm like, "Okay, something's not good." And when I got back, they informed me that my partner, Ralph, had passed away. He had died suddenly of a heart attack at 62. So that was devastating. But, you know, Powell, his son, and I just looked at each other and said, you know what, we're going to do what we set out to do. And so Powell is now into the business 100%. He's our chief development officer. He's no longer is working real estate, and it has been an absolutely wonderful relationship. You know, I lost my son, who would be his age, and he lost his dad. So, you know, it's somewhat serendipitous, but we, and we never really talk about it, but it's there. He fills a void for me, and I hope I fill a void for him.
Wow.
Yeah, that's quite a story. That's quite a story.
Yeah, you can't make that stuff up either.
No.
No, you can't. No, but I appreciate you sharing it with us.
Sure thing.
You talk about baptism by fire, though. I mean, you know, partnership stories that we hear sometimes of people who've known each other for years and years and years, and I can attest to it. I've been in that scenario where somebody who was a great friend became a partner and it didn't work, and here somebody you didn't know became your partner, and look what's happened the other way around. So, you know, kudos to you for making lemonade out of what could have been a completely different scenario.
So basically we went from partnership fast to artisan fast. And so tell
what
us
a segue, Paul.
Nice segue, huh? Almost sound like I know what I'm doing.
Take us to
the consumer proposition here, and what the consumers like about this, because as I read, the guests get to customize their own salads and pizzas from a myriad of fresh ingredients. Walk us through the consumer experience.
It's actually theater. What we've done with the interiors is we've elevated the interiors, and I won't get long-winded about it, but we've taken where we saw was a void, where we felt was a void in fast casual, and instead of vibrant colors, bright lights, muted music, hard benches, we softened things up as much as we could with a lot of brick and wood, and limited signage. And when a guest comes in, ideally they'll walk in the front door, they take a look around, they're really not sure what to do, and we have a young lady that's called a pizza host that will approach them, ask if they've been here before. If they haven't, here's how everything works. And you start out here, you can place your pizza order, and then you move down in front of the choppers, and you can customize your own salad. All of our dressings are organic. All of our dressings are gluten-free. Our pizza sauce is organic. Our cheese are organic. And we educate the guests as to what to do, because it's a little daunting until you've done it the first time. And they'll place their order for pizza. That gets fired to the pizza station, and then they move down in front of the choppers, and they can order from any one of four choppers. They can order one of the salads that we've already crafted. You know, I'll have the tuna palooza salad, or you can customize it from starting with your greens. We've got four different greens to order from, 50 different ingredients to top it with, proteins, etc. And we'll actually build the salad. We will chop it. We will toss it in front of you. We'll put it into the bowl that you're going to ultimately eat out of, and we'll hand it right to you. And you're watching the theater of the chopping. We have these double-bladed half-moon knives called mezzalinas, and these guys are lightning fast with these knives, and it's truly a show. And we get very, very high marks for being fresh because they see it go from the refrigeration unit to the chopping table into their bowl, and the guests love it. And they can say, hey, could I have more cucumber, a little less dressing? So they really like the customization piece, and we encourage it fully. And from there, then they'll grab a beverage. We serve off of china, real linen, real silverware, real glasses. We have a nice display of wines. We do a dozen different wines, six reds, six whites, craft beers on draft. And so you'll pay. If you order a glass of wine or beer, then that'll follow you to the table by the way of a food runner. And you sit down, you get a couple bites out of your salad. And if we do it right, and 99% of the time we do, shortly afterwards, your pizza arrives. And it's kind of a cool experience. It's almost a hybrid between casual and fast casual. And that's why we've dubbed it Artisan Fast, because of the chef-driven recipes. And I also call it Elevated Fast Casual, just because we seem to be we've elevated the experience entirely.
Are you snobs on your wine? Or tell me about the wine lists or the compatibility of the wine. Do you make a pairing kind of an opportunity for your guests, or is it just a short wine list?
Wines are very approachable. That's the word we use, approachable. We keep the price points. It would be a drag to come in and spend $7 for a salad and then, $12 for a glass of wine. That'd be a slap in the face. So we our price points on wine are $6.50 to $8.50. We don't go above $8.50.
Awesome. Hey, this is Franchise Today. I'm Stan Friedman, along with Paul Segretto, and we're talking today with pizza, salad, and artisan fest lifelong foodie Chris LaRocca, founder of Crushed Red. Franchise Today is brought to you by the Franchise Foundry, where their team of professionals has been bringing emerging brands to market for more than 30 years with healthy, sustainable growth, the kind that comes from experience. The Franchise Foundry provides their clients with coaching and consulting, a hybrid approach which fosters more effective solutions for their corporate teams as well as their franchisees. Franchise Foundry is rich in practical, hands-on experience and expertise in general business management, operational and change management, and is skilled and proficient in digital marketing, franchise recruitment, and development. The Franchise Foundry team can also assist you with creating roadmaps for potential mergers and acquisitions and the guidance needed to navigate those courses. Learn more about Paul Segretto and the Franchise Foundry, along with their expanding list of clients, at www.franchisefoundry.com. Franchise Today also brought to you by FRM Solutions, offering best-in-class CRM and document management software specifically designed for franchising. FRM offers the only CRM tool built exclusively for franchising, enabling you to manage and store text messages as well as all your emails. FRM also enables simple collaborative communication between you and your prospective and existing franchisees. Make today the day you give FRM a look and start 2017 assured that all of your candidate and franchisee correspondence, including text messages, are being permanently tracked and stored in candidate and franchisee records. FRM Solutions, found on the web at frmsolutions.com. So we want to dive in, Chris, to a little bit about the franchising side of your business and how you guys came to the conclusion that growth through franchising was the way you were going to take this thing and spread it across the country. And tell us a little bit about your plans for how you see that, in that you're, what, in two states now, I think, between Missouri and Colorado. So are you doing do you have any kind of a structured approach to geography, or is yours a program that will enable you to establish support and distribution any place, whether it's contiguous or not?
The plan was to grow in a in a circle, but plans never work out. So the answer to your question is yes. You know, the way we planned it was, let's go from St. Louis and go out in circles. But we've had opportunities, great opportunities, which have allowed us to kind of cross boundaries and to go into, we are in Colorado. We're under construction in Kansas with a franchise partner. We have a large group that's taken Oklahoma, Arkansas, and northern Texas. So we're beginning to grow there. I mean, the good news is we're not out in California, so we're not making those long trips. You know, we're making hour and a half plane rides. We've been very, very diligent about making sure that our supply chain is in place. I've got one of my partners and one of the partners, Mike Marino, handles our supply chain. And this is the guy who was a 17-year veteran. He was the director of national baking for Panera for 17 years. And Mike has developed our dough recipe, and he's got us poised that we could open a restaurant a week if we needed to in terms of the organizational chart and supply. So we're surprisingly ahead for our size and age. We're surprisingly further than most would expect us to be as far as systems and supply chain.
And then from the perspective
also,
of...
Go right ahead.
Go ahead, Paul.
No, I was just going to say also, and I know you place a high priority on producing little to no waste, which obviously is an attractive, criteria, so to speak, for candidates, especially in today's day and age. Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. Several points of differentiation. We operate under what I call this healthy halo. We are not tree hugging. If I don't care what I eat, and Paul, you come with me and you really watch what you put into your body, we're both going to be very comfortable and appreciative of what Crushed Red can do for our meal needs. We're more than just fueling our body within our restaurants with the organic infusion, the dressings and what I mentioned earlier. We get good marks there because we care about what's going on with the planet. We are a sustainable organization, meaning we compost or recycle over 90% of what comes through our restaurants. So we have composting bins. We have staff that's trained to separate, and they're very respectful, and they take it serious, and we do as well. The lack of paper goods in our restaurant really helps. Energy Star rated equipment. We look at these at everything. We are certified by the Green Dining Alliance for our building materials and for how we operate our restaurants. We also have something that I haven't found another restaurant that does this. But we require it in our restaurants and in the company restaurants as well as franchise restaurants. It's called the Clean Hands System. It's a hand washing monitoring system. So we have a criteria with our employees. Every employee must wash their hands when they clock in and minimum of one time every hour afterwards. So if I work a 5-hour shift, I should have washed my hands a minimum of 6 times. We have in every hand sink, every restroom, we have a system that when you put your hand underneath for the soap to emit, it will beep, and then the employees will say their name into the voice box. It will take 4 seconds. It'll recognize the employee. It'll show Chris LaRocca on the digital readout. And at that point, at 11:24, I've been logged into our back office computer as having washed my hands. We can get a report on demand, but I get them from every restaurant in the company every Monday morning, and I know which employees have and have not complied. 100% is our goal. We operate at about 90%. There's always the new folks that haven't caught on to it yet. And we take it seriously. We manage it, and I can guarantee you when I'm in the restaurants, you know, if I've got somebody that's at 68%, I'll just casually go up to him and say, "Hey, Mr. 68%, how you doing today?" And he knows exactly what I'm saying. That won't happen again. And I manage it. I mean, we take it to the extreme that we've had employees that will not get a salary increase as a result of them not meeting the minimum requirements. So we're very, very serious about it. We don't want to be that guy on the news that just had an E. coli outbreak or foodborne illness. So that's probably more information than you wanted, but
that's
it's a point of differentiation. We work hard to build a brand with points of differentiation. You know, when we talk about chopped salads, I mean, that's almost 70% of our sales mix is chopped salads. In fact, I did a stat yesterday for another interview. Our restaurants go through between 51 and 56,000 pounds of greens every year. So, I mean, it's a huge number. But it tells you that, you know, when you talk about points of differentiation, the salads, the customization piece, the elimination of the veto vote because, you know, we've got the pizza infusion. Grandkids love it. You know, you come into the restaurants, it's like central casting. You know, it's 65% female. It's just what everybody's looking for at this point in time. And as you know, I mean, the field is very crowded with the walk the line, build your own pizza under 5 minute concepts. And we also know that bubble is beginning to burst. And we play very nicely in that arena, but at the end of the day, we're the differentiating, we're the concept of differentiation because of the salads. And that's why we've gained so much attention.
When I hear you talk about the hand washing, I'm sitting here thinking just how difficult that could be. If you recruit a franchisee who doesn't share vision, values, and ethics right down to the culture, not just to the food and or to the concept. In a company-owned store, I can see the ease with which you might enforce that. But in a franchised store, as we know, sometimes getting even employees on the front line to do the basic things that they're supposed to do can become a task. So in your recruitment process, tell us a little bit about what you're looking for in a franchisee. Obviously, you know, the food experience is important, but I'm feeling like there's a cultural fit here that you're probably screening for as well. Am I correct?
You're 100% correct. I had learned through working with another company as director of franchise operations, I learned a lot of things not to do. So it was a great lesson in terms of what not to do. And we don't chase the check. Quite honestly, we have said no to more potential franchise partnerships than we've said yes to, for just that reason, the cultural piece. Are they going to buy in? Are they just playing the dog and pony? And, you know, we know how it can be. You know, you get out on your own and you say, yeah, you know, we'll get rid of this, get rid of that. So, through the interview process, I mean, after we check off all the financial and the experience qualifications and criteria, then it's as we tour the restaurants, and I'm extremely passionate about what we do and why we do it. Everything that happens in the restaurant, I can give you a reason why. And through this one-day tour, you can find out so much about a potential franchise partner and are they going to buy in? Are they going to be a team player? Are they committed? Do they share the vision? And are they going to be a part of the culture? Or are they going to be an outlier? And truthfully, our last piece of criteria for a franchise partner is if I go to your market and after spending 10 hours touring and working with you, do I want to go out and have a beer with you? And if the answer is no, you're probably not going to fit in from a chemistry standpoint with our culture. And you know, that's almost a laughable way, but it's to evaluate. But it really is our final criteria, because we the culture is everything. It's everything for us.
So another great segue here. Speaking about beer, you recently formed a partnership with a former Anheuser-Busch executive, as well as with an Ernst & Young executive, in an equity partnership. How was that for a segue, Stan? That was pretty good, wasn't it?
Really, Paul. Way too smooth,
got a
Paul.
For a living. You're good at it.
That was smooth.
Way smooth. Anyway, Chris, tell us a little bit about what led into, turning this into a bigger thing through an equity partnership with two individuals from Anheuser-Busch and Ernst & Young.
Sure. We have been looking to raise capital. Our growth thus far has been organic, through profitability of the restaurants, but we really wanted to make more of an impact and grow faster. And we were looking for the right partners, and we'd had several of them. In fact, we had a group from the United Kingdom that we were far down the road with. But then as we talk about this culture piece, I realized that we were misaligned on our end game and pulled the plug on a very big check. But, it's not all about the money. So we were looking, a mutual friend put us in contact with Dave Peacock, former president of Anheuser-Busch, and Dean Van de Kamp. And after Dave's departure from Anheuser-Busch, he and Dean formed a company, and they're actually the largest Jamba Juice franchisees. They have 77 Jamba Juices, most in California. Both Dave and Dean are St. Louisans, and the mutual friend picked up the phone and called Dave one afternoon, this is funny, and said, hey, Dave, the local guys from Crushed Red are looking to raise some capital. Have you ever heard of the concept? And Dave jokingly said, what's the name of it again? He goes, Crushed Red. He goes, no, I'm just yanking your chain. He goes, I'm actually having lunch in Crushed Red as we speak. He was and is a huge fan of the brand. And we began a courtship that lasted about 7 months, and we were very well aligned as far as core values and vision. So now we have access to capital to grow company restaurants at a much brisker pace than we originally thought.
So when you're talking about company restaurants and then, of course, our focus on franchising, you made some mention earlier in the podcast about some large operators in Texas and Oklahoma and larger chunks of territory. Tell us a little bit about how you're going to market. Are you doing it with area development multi-unit? Are you doing it with single unit developers and or both? And I want to follow up on that with a follow-up question after you
sure.
Tell us what the lay of the land looks like.
Sure. Great question. We will not do single unit. We do area development agreements only. And our thought process is just this. We're looking for a more sophisticated operator, somebody that maybe has another brand, let's call it the TGI Fridays, and maybe they've built out their territory and they're looking for a non-competing brand to be able to complement and build that territory. Those are the type of franchise partners we're seeking out, quite honestly, and we are pretty good operators. We're looking for groups that are better than we are, or at least as good as we are, and sophisticated, because I know that the best ideas come from and best practices come from the franchise community, and I think that we can improve our operating systems, we can improve our concept if we strategically choose the right franchise partners.
Is it too early for you to have any kind of financial performance representations, or is there an item 19 in place?
There is. There's item 19 in place. Our EBITDAs are very strong, and those are all posted So you could go to the website and you could take a look at how these restaurants have performed. But top line sales are better than expected for fast casual. The interesting piece is the infusion of alcohol. You know, we're running anywhere from 5% as much as 14% alcohol mix, which is unheard of for fast casual. Mm-hmm. Was there another part of that question that I missed?
It was a two-part question. It was going to be based on whether or not you're single or multi-unit, and you answered that. And the question regarding multi-unit is what triggered the financial performance representation question, because so many young brands that are emerging early stage would have a more difficult time than you seem to be having attracting the multi-unit operator to their concepts. You seem to have nailed it on both fronts.
We've been fortunate because we haven't done very much advertising. And I have to tell you, the franchise partners that we have in place now are individuals that have traveled through St. Louis and have experienced the restaurant and have picked up the phone or sent an email to me and said, "Hey, love the brand. Are you franchising? Can we talk?" That's been 100% of who we have on board right now, and actually the folks we're in discussion with as well. They've not come through any other recruitment of franchise partners.
So another segue. So organic growth for an organic brand. this is great. Great information. Especially, you know, people, coming in after having experienced nothing better than a positively memorable experience that turns into something greater. So, Chris, tell us how other individuals might get in touch with you or learn more about Crushed Red and the opportunities, and, of course, any particular franchise or restaurant events that you'll be at where they could learn more as well.
Well, the couple of ways you can go to our website, crushed-red.com. There's a franchise tab there. There's some videos. There's some a little bit of financial information. But you can understand and get a feel for the brand and what it is we deliver. In addition, my partner, Powell, who I mentioned earlier, you can contact Powell. His email is P, as in Powell, Kalish, K-A-L-I-S-H, at crushed-red.com. P. Kalish at crushed-red.com. And, you know, we can have follow-up discussions, send information, and, really have some good phone conversations and give anybody a very good feel about who we are, what we have to offer, points of differentiation, et cetera.
Yeah, and of course, if anybody is in the St. Louis and specifically the Clayton area, and Chris or his partner asked you to visit with him at the Ritz-Carlton right there in Clayton, there is not a finer hotel that I know. When you were saying the Ritz-Carlton, I knew exactly where you were talking about.
It is one of the most fabulous
Ritz-Carltons I've ever been in.
Yeah, well, you know, we're like the Jeffersons. We had no business being in there, but we were anyway.
Extraordinary place. I've had a couple of conferences there. Really great place. Well, Chris, I really thank you for spending time with us today. Very intriguing business. Look forward to exceptional growth and look forward to seeing you at some type of franchise event, and certainly be great to put a face with a name and a voice, and certainly a great story about Crushed Red. Thank you very much for being our guest today.
You bet, Stan. Paul, I really appreciate it. You've been very kind, and love the conversation. And if anybody needs to get in touch with us, hopefully we're around. We'd love to show off the brand.
Awesome. Thanks again, Chris.
Great.
Appreciate it.
All right, gents. Have a good afternoon. Bye-bye.
Well, Stan, another great franchise today, another great story. I love these brands that had previously been under our radar. Great story indeed. Sorry, I got carried away with my segues, but they were too easy.
Yeah, but you know what? I mean, I'm sitting here thinking, yet, you know, just when he talked a little bit about the naming of the brand, who better than a guy named LaRocca than somebody to own a brand called Crushed Red? Come on. Made in heaven.
Right. I thought it was interesting today he was mentioning the veto factor, and I knew exactly what he was telling about. And what was ironic about it was that today I had announced that, you know, Franchise Foundry for 2017 is spearheading a new brand in that space called Vito's Famous, which is more of a Philadelphia experience, a Philadelphia pizza and Philadelphia Philly cheesesteaks. So it was just ironic, and maybe there's another segue, right? He opened it up with
Vito's. There you go. You're on a roll today, Cigaretto.
Stan,
don't quit now.
I'm on a roll. And speaking about a roll, okay, and I would be remiss in not promoting this, or actually lobbing it to you. We got a great event coming up just over an hour from now. Would you please tell us about it?
Sure. I'm happy that we are. FRM is rolling out the first in a series of podcasts, not podcasts, but webinars. You got me in the podcast mentality here for this hour, Paul. I'm going to be rolling out a series of webinars this year that are going to feature just, you know, aha moments, some blinding flashes of the obvious that we should be thinking more about and perhaps don't think enough about. And today I'll be joined by Tim Gilboyd, the general manager of Franchise Help, Steve Olson from Steve Olson and Associates, and the guy who I call the dean of the dashboards in Google Analytics, Jimmy Weeks. And we're going to be talking about revving up your engine for the new year in lead management and making more out of what you've got, no matter how many leads you're getting. Making sure you're getting everything that you can, optimizing and tuning up your engine to manage your lead flow. So that's coming up at 2 o'clock today, and that too, as our podcast, will also be available on demand for those who didn't catch it live.
That's great. I also want to announce, Stan, I have a unique opportunity as I've been working with more and more restaurant owners. And I've been asked to present on a topic next week on a live webinar on January 25th at 3 o'clock p.m. Central Time. Is franchising the right way to grow your restaurant business? And it's on a membership site, restaurantowner.com. And if anybody's out there that is just starting a franchise in the restaurant industry or considering it, I highly recommend becoming a member of the restaurantowner.com site and certainly attending this webinar, because the interesting thing, the angle that I'm coming at, is that whether or not you actually do follow through with franchising your business will become better because of the process that you will go through to see if you are right for franchising. So that's next week at 3 p.m. Central Time. Stan, another great event. I am looking forward to your webinar an hour from now, so I'm sure both of us will run, grab a quick bite to eat, and I will see you on the webinar soon. Until next week, my name is Paul Cigaretto, wishing you the best, the very best in this great, great thing we call franchising, and Franchise Today is out.